translation. At the end of the millennium, there would be Vishvavatamanu of the name Satyavrat would see that the Lord in the fish incarnation is the shelter of all kinds of living entities up to those in the earthly planets. Because of my fear of the vast water at the end of the millennium, the Vedas came out of my Brahma's mouth, and the Lord enjoys those vast waters and protects the Vedas. Purport by His Divine Grace E.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. During one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus, and at the end of each Manu, there is a devastation up to the earthly planets, and the vast water is fearful even to Brahma. So, in the beginning of the would-be Vaishvash, how do you pronounce his name? Vaishvata, Manu, such devastation would be seen by him. There would be many other instances also, such as the killing of the famous Sankoshura. This foretelling is by the past experience of Brahmaji, who knew that in that fearful, devastating scene, the Vedas would come out of his mouth. But the Lord, in his fish incarnation, would not only save all the living entities, including the demigods, animals, men, and great sages, but would also save the Vedas. Omagyanatam andashyaganandana shalakaya chakshusamalitam dena tasmai si gurave namaha sri chaitanya manobhishtam sabitam dena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dharanti svabalandikam namo om shivaraya krishna padaya bhutale smadi shivaya gaur govinda swami namo namo shivaraya krishna padaya bhutale smadi bhaktivedanta swami chinamane namaste saraswati devim gaurabani pichanine devashesha sunivadi vasitari sunivadi. So, this is interesting text here, and we can see by this text some things, like the Vedas. The Vedas is very important. Vedas is knowledge. Veda means knowledge. So there's all kinds of knowledge required for mankind. And not only the Dharma Shastra there, but also the Artha Shastra. Artha Shastra is more for the administration of mankind, certain rules and regulations, how to live one's life. Because in the Vedic society, the Brahminical class was clued in, you could say, to everything. Some may specialize in medical fields, some may specialize in economic fields, some may specialize in social sciences, some may specialize in other sciences, astrology, for instance, cosmology. And some would be very learned in the Shastra as such, the Vedanta, the Bhaktivedanta, the end of the Shastra. So there's, when we speak of Brahmins, Vaishnava Brahmins, there are, but there's many classes of Brahmins, there's many classes of Vaishyas, there's many classes of Shudras, there's many classes of Kshatriyas. We cannot put everything in one, everyone's the same. There's much variety. So in Vedic culture, the Lord was very anxious for the Vedas to be saved, because without the Vedas, how would mankind go on in a nice way? Therefore, he says in Bhagavad Gita, whenever there's a decline of religion and an increase of increase of irreligion, that time he comes. As you know, yada yada hidama shala grani bodhi bhavata. So this is very important. This is one of the main principles of divinity's duties here. Although Krishna has no duties, same time he has duties. He's such a capable personality, because he's so vast in his consciousness that he manifests various forms to perform various duties. And Prabhupada gives analogies to this conception, that, for instance, a president Let's take the President of the United States who came yesterday. He sat in the 10th row behind the Polish President. There was some criticism of that. anyway, he plays one part to his citizens, and he plays another part to his wife, and he plays another part to his family members. So he manifests different parts of his personality. So similarly, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he manifests in various ways to take certain responsibilities that have to be performed. So he has to come to this earth occasionally. It is said in the Shastra that in order for him to reestablish the principle of religion in the Vedas, he doesn't really have to come because his Brahminical men can come and do that job very well, as you know. But sometimes there is a need. And it's also said by our Acharyas that the main purpose of Krishna coming is to display his Leela pastimes. You can see here in this purport, it's mentioned that Brahma says that Krishna comes to enjoy the vast waters of the devastating ocean. So even Krishna, he finds pleasure everywhere. These huge devastation, Krishna comes in a fish, and he enjoys Leela. And we can talk about his Leela and why he came, and in that way purify our existence. And instead of being self-centered, thinking ourselves to be the supreme enjoyers, and we can begin to contemplate the greatest personality and how to serve and partake in his pleasure, giving him pleasure. This is going on anyway. You have your mother, you have your father, you have your relatives. You like to give pleasure to them. It's not an alien concept to us to give pleasure to someone. But the Vedic conception is that one should give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because by pleasing him, automatically everyone else will be pleased. And because he's the greatest personality, he is called Rasaraj. He knows how to enjoy in many ways. And we have to understand ourselves to be in a suffering condition. We are forced by the modes of nature to act in various ways where we have attractions, repulsions. When you feel attraction and repulsion for things, when you feel a likeness and a dislike for something, maybe various situations you might be in, either personalities or physical things or mental things, you should understand this is your modes of nature working. It's your conditioning that you're forced to act and feel certain things. Of course, feeling and seeing, we all feel and see individually. This is quite important. Krishna wants to share with us what we feel, what we see. Because, isn't it, when we have relationships, how do you feel about something? How do you see this? So on and so forth. So similarly, Krishna likes to, because he's become many, Krishna's become many, and we all feel and see in certain ways, and Krishna wants to share that with us, and he wants to explore the way we see and feel about him or his devotees. You could say like that, perhaps. I have this debate with some devotees about does Krishna know everything? Well, I won't get into too much about that debate right now, but the question I like to think is that although Krishna, like you may know how someone feels about something or how someone sees something, but how did you come to that conclusion? What made you feel like that? And when did you, your individuality is there. So Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. He likes to exchange ras with all living entities in many, many forms. And in that realm, you don't require a material body. The material body is finished, the material mind is finished at that point. So your material mind is accepting and rejecting, liking, disliking. You become Tunada Pisanichana, and you become tolerant of everyone, and you become very respectful of everyone, because you can only become like that if you are Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Suchatina Kangsati Samasavashu Bhuteshu. Unless you become like that, you cannot become tolerant and you cannot become humble, because you will be pulled by your material conditioning. Of course, it's not from one thing to the other. You know, it's not one extreme to the other. There's modes of nature working. So you climb through the modes from goodness, from ignorance to passion, then to goodness, and then to the higher modes. There's a whole psychology behind how to free yourself from this heavy conditioning that we feel. So this is the science. And Krishna likes to establish the Vedas because he likes to establish Brahminical culture. Brahminical culture are the highest classes of men. They know how to behave in all fields. And the ones on the devotees who are Shuddha-sattva, because there's sattva and then there's Shuddha-sattva, the highest, the transcendental modes. Prabhupada, Srila Vishwanath, Shakyavati Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Stante, these are all Shuddha-sattva devotees. They're not at all affected by the modes of nature. So, actually, I was interested that the Prime Minister yesterday at the Queen's state funeral, she read a passage from the Bible, and it's got an interesting passage, because one of Jesus' disciples asked him, show me God. How can I know God? You speak of God, but how do I know God? And then Jesus said to him that if you know me, you know God. So I thought, yeah, this is very good. Because if you know Sri Guru, you know divinity, because divinity is the external representative of God in the sense that he is intimately connected with divinity, and everything he says, does, and feels is connected with divinity. So it's the same energy, Suddhasattva, the higher realms of devotion, the higher realms of consciousness. So that was quite nice. That the Christian Bible, they say all these things. You just got to understand what context it's in and how it connects with the Vedas. And I would say one more thing about that funeral, because I happened to watch it. There was a hymn at the end that spoke, you know that verse, Vishaya Vanivatane Neharashadehanam Rasavajana Sapiyasha Padam Vishwa. Padam Vishwa Hayates. So this hymn was there, and it was him glorifying. He said, if you want to understand God, you've got to get the higher taste. I thought, oh, very nice. Two things in that funeral connected to the Vedas. If you want to understand God, you have to get a higher taste. By association of sadhus, it will bring you up to the higher realms. So the Brahminical culture, Vedas is so important because it teaches us to associate with such sadhus of higher consciousness, higher culture, who know how to perform duty, who know how to do things properly. And this is the idea of Srila Prabhupada in his International Society of Krishna Consciousness. He's come to establish Brahminical culture. He wants to make some Brahmins, because by their association, everything else will fall in place. Currently, the world is in turmoil. Why? Because we have the Vedas has been ignored. It's been ignored. And we can see later on, I shall discuss something of that, the importance of re-establishing Vedic principles. Veda means knowledge, so all cultures throughout the world are loosely connected already to the Vedas. Any religious culture, you will find parallels. Actually, you'll find parallels in science with the Vedas as well. you'll find parallels in economics, in social sciences. Everywhere you will find parallels in the Vedas. It's just that the some of the truths have been twisted, lost, and sort of minimized, and speculations have been added in time. So the whole idea of the Insulation of Krishna Consciousness and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada is to meet modernity, meet the modern world, and flip it, change it, and bring it back to the Vedas, and show how the modern world can be very much connected to the Vedic culture. Time, place, circumstance. We don't be fanatical. For instance, in years gone by, it could be that if someone did something very bad, they'd be punished in certain ways. Well, we wouldn't have that same punishment now. You'll find in the in the Artashastra, if you read that Artashastra, you'll find ancient punishments. Well, you know, we just couldn't do it today, could we? If someone was breaking the law, for instance, like thieving, you wouldn't go and instigate some kind of system where, okay, let's chop its hand off, would we? Why wouldn't we? Why? Because it would be, we'd see it as barbaric. And it is barbaric, of course. But in certain time, place, and circumstances, to teach a lesson in previous times, we had to accept that that was, perhaps their laws were not, or a certain class, at a certain time, it was good to set example. Today, we'd probably take them to prison and try to give them some lessons in how to act properly, and so on and so forth. So in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the opening sloka 111, if you read that verse, I'll try to remember because I did memorize that verse. It says, O Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, all-pervading personality of Godhead, we respect you, we pay obeisance to you because you are the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, destruction, and maintenance of the universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. He is independent. There's no other cause beyond him, and it's him only, and first imparted the Vedic knowledge in the heart of Brahmaji. So, Lord Krishna, son of us, we're all pervading person, I got a business as you, but it's only you ask the truth, and the primal cause of all causes. You are the, you give the Vedas. So, in this verse, we see how the Vedas is being saved due to the water of devastation and the fish incarnation. So we'll speak a bit about that. So creation, maintenance, and destruction is described. And the illusion of material world is described in that 111. In that verse, you'll see land, sin, and water, water, sin, and land. Even the great demigods are placed into illusion as one is illusory. You know, these things are described in the opening sloka. So the important point in this purport here is the Vedas. So let's discuss a bit about the Vedas. As I was saying earlier, Vedas means to know. Now the interesting thing is that knowledge must come from a person. So knowledge, when we speak about knowledge, like if we speak about scientific things or anything we analyze, like codes, I discussed this before in other classes, codes. Codes come from information. Information is codes. Codes come from a code giver. So when we see DNA codes and so on and so forth in our bodies, we can assume that in our experience at least, whenever there's codes set up in certain ways, it implies there's a code giver. So code giver means person. So similarly, knowledge. Whenever we speak of knowledge, knowledge must come from a person, someone who knows. So the supreme person, he is Krishna. He is the supreme giver of knowledge. So once he is known, everything is known, it's said. Once you know one thing, everything is known. So if you know Krishna, then you'll know everything because everything is Krishna. So that's a very important point. People say, well, how do you know everything? Well, we know because we know Krishna. Prabhupada used to say sometimes scientists would challenge him, and I'm speaking from the Vedas. The Vedas is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the origin of everything. So knowledge, ultimately knowledge should lead to knowledge of the science. So knowledge of all things, but what is the end of knowledge? Can anyone like to say what the end of knowledge is? Anyone like to give an insight? What do we mean by the end of knowledge? Application of knowledge. Yes, that's one way of looking at it, the end of knowledge. In one way, yes. Could you know something? Now apply it. Okay, yeah, fine. All there is to be known. Yes, that's a good point. Yes, Babu?
Absolute truth.
Huh? Coming to the point of the absolute truth, yes. Ah, that's another aspect. Yes, that's a good point. The knowledge leads to different areas. Well, there's different areas of knowledge. So you're speaking about ras, right? Yeah, that's... Yes, I was going to come to that. What were you going to say, Baba, behind you? Yeah, that's there's nothing more to be known. So as Govinda Prabhu rightly says, yes, last one. Yeah, that's a very good point. And person means so many things, because a person is very complicated.
End of knowledge in Sanskrit is Vedanta.
Vedanta. Yes. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Nadi Adi Govindas. Cause of all causes, yes. All these things are true, which is what he said, but the ultimate, as that devotee Ananda said as well, the end of knowledge must be knowledge and love. Love. You see, what is the greatest thing in life? The greatest thing in life to us must be love as well, because we must speak about love, not just knowledge. Because like the impersonal conclusion, you can have knowledge, but you'll find in the Vedic scriptures, and the example is given of the residents of Raj, they even discard knowledge to some extent. It's not so important to them. What is more important is the experience of the person who's giving the knowledge, and ultimately the exchange between the knower and the receiver of knowledge. This is a very important principle, because that is the whole goal of life, if you know what I mean, in the sense that the end of knowledge must mean that you come to the highest experience that one can come to be fully satisfied in all respects. So, is the science of love, the science of rasa. This is what's depicted in the residence of Vrindavan, because there's the Vaikuntha plains, and there is also a very wonderful exchange of the residence of Vaikuntha and Krishna with his 16,108 wives. In fact, if you read Krishna book, you'll see the daily activities of Krishna. He rises in the morning, he goes to his Brahminical council, he sorts things out, he has these wonderful exchanges with his wives, and he, you know, it's like a very formal affair, and it's very beautiful, and there's certain levels of love exchanged there and great deep respect and an admiration for each other's standing, if you like. But higher, the end of knowledge, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the cream of all knowledge, and this is what we must take. This is described in the Vedas, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the cream, is the essence, is the sweetest fruit of all knowledge. And it is picked and spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. When he speaks, it becomes even sweeter. So what is he concentrating on? What is he concentrating on in the Vedas? He concentrates on Krishna's Leela, actually. The culmination really comes to just how many verses in the 10th canto? There's certain verses, and then last, in the 10th canto, the ones where Krishna plays his flute and he goes out. There's other maybe 15, 20, maybe 40, 50 verses. These are the essence of all knowledge, in the sense of the knowledge of love and the knowledge of rasa. So that's the point which we're trying to make. It's not that the other knowledge is not important, it is important, but and another point is that when the Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari, that's Jiva Goswami and Rupa Manjari, when they're in the spiritual world, in their forms as assistants of Radharani and Lalita, when they come to this realm, they become Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami, and they exhibit their knowledge very nicely. As you know, Jiva Goswami is Sandavas. He is very concise. And so basically, you will find in the roundabout way that as you come to Krishna consciousness and you acquire knowledge, and you should acquire knowledge in all fields, but the knowledge is ultimately is kind of put to one side because your sweetness comes out. The sweetness of Krishna is revealed to you through your devotion. Therefore, bhakti mama vajaranti yavan yasmasmi tatvaraha tato mam tapakot gatya vishvate taranantanam. By bhakti, one can understand Krishna, and then bhakti mama, yes, what's the next verse? Anyway. So this is what happens in devotional life. As you advance in your spiritual life, your duties and your responsibilities and your gathering of knowledge for practical purposes almost becomes a secondary thing, because your heart becomes very sweet, and you begin to see the oneness of all beings, and you begin to be able to relate to all beings in various ways. And ultimately, where this Krishna conscious movement will take you is to the planes of revealing your original personality and your original relationship with Krishna. So this is the end of knowledge, but in a roundabout way, that's what I'm saying. The end of knowledge is to understand your sarup with Krishna and exchange your love with Krishna. But so there's, whilst you're here, you have to do two things. You have to do that, but you also have to assist Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Bhaktivinoda Thakur in their mission to teach these things. So you teach it. Therefore, I said that the Paramahansa, pure devotee, he comes down. He's Uttama. He is. He has his Siddha Sarup. He is intimately connected with Krishna. Very blissful, very blissful, very loving. But he comes down on that platform to teach practically, in order to establish certain principles, because You cannot go from one step to another quickly. There's the gradual path. And this is what Srila Prabhupada has come to teach us in a very structured way. And all our acharyas, he is representing all our acharyas. Another interesting thing, I keep going back to this funeral, but at the end of the funeral, what they did was, I don't know if you saw that, the Queen's coffin was there. This is related, by the way. They took off the crown off the coffin, and they took off the scepter, and they placed it on the altar of God. So that represented now, she's done her duty, now that is passed on to the next person. So similarly, Guru is one. He, and Srila Prabhupada, in his talk to his godbrothers on one of Srila Bhakti Sanjaya's appearance day, made a note of that point and brought it out in his speech. Guru is one. He manifests in very many ways. So, shiksha and diksha, no difference. That's the point. So, knowledge, and Jiva Goswami in his Putisandaba, he brings out this point of sweetness, Krishna's sweetness. This is what he will manifest before us when we begin to approach him. So, Krishna himself, he shows an example of these things, because not only does he exhibit his activities in Goloka Vrindavan, but he only stays there for so many years, then he leaves. He leaves Vrindavan, that sweetness. Why? Because he has to go and do his duty. He does not neglect his duty. He goes to sort out Kamsa, and then he marries the 16,108 queens and goes to Dwarka, sets up his city. So he has responsibilities to do, and he has to go and do them. But his heart is always in Vrindavan. The sweetness of his heart remains always in Vrindavan. There's a passage in the Uddhava Gita, Uddhava Sandesh, where Krishna's, he's standing on the, he's in the rooftops, and he's looking in his city of Dwarka, or Mathura, I think, at Dwarka, and he is contemplating his youthful activities with the gopis, and he remembers the love of the gopis. And tears flow from his eyes as he remembers their ecstatic love for him and his ecstatic love for them. And then he calls for Uddhava and he says, send this message. And then Uddhava goes. And you can read that Uddhava Sandesh. And also, there's always a calling to go back to that realm of sweetness. When Krishna left, what's his name? Who came to take Krishna away? Akura came, took him away. All the gopis lamenting. Radharani was lying, hopeless, feeling hopeless. The Lita, her most intimate servant, was lying. What to do? So she was on a bed of roses. The Lita went to get some water. And there she saw a swan coming towards her. And this is the Hamsadutta in that book. Now, Lita, she never fails in her duty to Krishna and to Radharani. She never fails. So she saw this swan. Oh, you can be a message carrier. So she gave this swan some directions. Take this message to Krishna. So that message goes to Krishna, ultimately. And then Uddhava comes and then... like that. So this sweetness is where the real essence of devotional life is, and that's what bhakti brings you one towards in a gradual process. So in our system we have karma yoga. Karma yoga means you engage your activities as much as you can. Do a little bit for Krishna. Okay, you like to enjoy, fine. Do a little bit for Krishna at least. Okay, fine. That will lead you some gyan. You'll get some knowledge from some detachment. Some duty will come about in your heart. Yes, I must do this, I must do that. It's my duty, I must do. And then from that gyan, what will happen? Further knowledge, you'll come to the platform, nishkama karma. Your activities in your karma will be, you'll be detached. You won't care about the result anymore. Whereas in karma yoga, you kind of attach to the result still. But nishkama karma, you don't, you're just doing your duty, whether you get a good or bad result. This was Arjuna's platform on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Krishna said to Arjuna, you have the capability of doing nishkama karma. So he was doing like that. Though if you're going to fight on the battle, whether you're victorious or not victorious, doesn't matter. Just fight, because I say fight. This nishkama karma leads to the higher platforms of knowledge even, higher jnana, which will lead to bhava bhakti, prema bhakti, and so on and so forth, nishta. You become very fixed, nishta, fixed in your devotion. Your modes and nature will no longer bother you. No more hankering, lamenting, this is good, this is bad, this person annoys me, that person doesn't annoy me, none of that anymore. You're like that. So this is the process that Prabhupada has taught. And in his own life, Srila Prabhupada gave a very good example of these things. So tolerant. I think, Prabhupada, you can give many examples of Prabhupada's being very tolerant in many situations. Sometimes very inconvenience in his own life, even not so fit in his body, but still blissfully carrying out his work. Because when you get old, it's going to get tough. You have to remain cheerful, and your body's limits will come to an end. It won't. Your mind may become more disturbed. Bhattano Thakur speaks in his songs, Charanagati, when old age comes, fear might increase. So many things increase when you get older. You become more crotchety. You're more disturbed. You've heard that expression. You guys are all young. You don't know what I'm talking about. But later you'll find out. So Krishna, he knew what his duties were. And Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, they carried out their duties. Before the Rajasuya sacrifice, even Krishna showed by example by washing the feet of the guests. Because the Rajasuya sacrifice had to take place. The Pandavas and Krishna all took up their duties. It says here, Bhishma Dev supervised the kitchen, Duryodhana and looked after the treasury. Sahadev, he respectfully greeted the guests. Nakula procured needy items. Arjuna attended to the respectable elders. And Krishna washed everyone's feet. So Jiva Goswami in his Pratisandava, he makes the point for discussion that someone may say, was it right for Yudhisthira to engage Krishna in washing the feet of the guests? What do you think? You think it's okay to Krishna, you can wash the feet of the guests? This is what, this is the duty that Krishna took up. It's like getting, anyway. But actually Krishna says, there's one verse, the 10th canto, 69th verse, chapter, text number 40. O Brahmin, I am the speaker of religion, I am its performer, its sanctioner, and I absorb these principles myself when I teach them. Just see the greatness of Krishna. He comes to teach us how to, just like Srila Prabhupada, he came to teach us. He came to the New York where the guys were really, degraded, but not. Some people say, oh, these hippies, they're just degraded hippies. And Prabhupada sometimes says like that as well. But he knew that these hippies were very intelligent as well. They were great thinkers, the hippies. Some of them were very, not all of them, but some of them were great thinkers. They were great strategists. And I think the Apple, the guy who, he was a hippie, but look what he's doing now. He's formed that big company. So you'll find that Prabhupada picked up many men in that time who were very intelligent. They weren't hippies per se. They were just like dropouts because they wanted to explore higher consciousness. And of course, we would say, this is all the arrangement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when Prabhupada came. These men were all waiting for him. They were probably disciples of previous acharyas ready to take up the work. And this is all Krishna's arrangement. So Krishna is doing his duty. And in the Bhagavatam, Atapumbhya Dhisashta, Varnashram Vibhagasa, Sunushtistama Dhamasha, Samsiddhi Hari Shoshanam. Do your duty, but do it for Krishna. So, everyone has a specific duty, Prabhupada said. So see to it that your duty is done nicely and do it for Krishna. And then if Krishna is satisfied, then you will be satisfied and everyone will be satisfied. And there's another text in the Dhamma Shai Bhavagasha Nato Rikopte Natasha Dhamma Kantasha Kamalevi Smitaha. All occupations are ultimately meant for liberation. That's an interesting text. All occupations are meant for liberation. How can we say such things? In today's world, we can never have such a concept that all occupations are meant for liberation. But the Vedas, like I was saying earlier, connects everything, even your occupation. And your occupation can be a source of liberation to you. It can take you to the spiritual world. But it says in the sages, but one who is engaged in the ultimate occupation, he should not use the fruits of his work for sense gratification, but he should use it to cultivate knowledge. So this is a very important point. So let me just, before we finish this class, Vedas chasaveyaham eva vedyovadanti vedacham. By the Vedas I am to be known, I am the compiler of the Vedas, I am the knower of the Vedas. The Vedas are the living and breathing of Vishnu. This is the fact. The Vedas are the living, breathing, it's an energy, it comes from a person. It's an order, like the high court judge gives an order. The order is carried out. It's a living thing. So the Vedas is a living thing. It's knowledge. So there's different aspects of the Vedas. There's the Shruti, the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, and the Atash. What is that? What is it? The Rig Veda, Shruti. The Rig Veda? I've got to know. What is it now? Remind me. Huh? Yeah, Satad Veda. You know, yeah, Sama, Atta, yeah. So I made a note here because I need to remind myself of these things. The Rig Veda, they are, because I thought, oh, I'm able to give a structured class here today. The Rig Veda, the hymns and the mantras, including the Gayatri, it said. These are the hymns of the Vedas. These are the Vedas. Hymns, mantras, like glorification, structured work. The Yajna Veda, they're a book of sacrifice. Maybe you know, the weddings and all that kind of stuff. And then I was speaking previously about the Dharma Shastra, which is the administration of mankind, cosmology, astrology. All that is connected as well, you know. Time is an interesting thing because we were speaking about time in this verse. Whenever Sariputta Prabhu, if you want to go on to his YouTube channel, put in Sariputta time, and you'll find he gives a 25-minute lecture on Vedic time. Very interesting. Have you gone on Sariputta's channel, any of you guys? Go on to YouTube, Sariputta Prabhu. He's one of the greatest scientists in ISKCON. He's one of the earliest scientists. He was part of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And he gives amazing classes on all these topics. But he is saying in Vedic time, every 4 seconds, when you breathe in and out, it takes 4 seconds of your time. But in them 4 seconds, the arc of the universal system moves for 10 minutes of its time. So time is all interconnected. The whole structure of cosmology, astrology, is all very mathematical, and everything is in precise order. So these are the four types of the Vedas. And ultimately, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the cream of the Vedas, as we were discussing earlier. We're coming to an end here, so I'll just finish off by saying that... what was I going to say? I think we can say enough that I could go on so many other things, but... I was going to discuss briefly before we end this class that the water of devastation, the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, Karanadakshaya Vishnu, so there's four oceans. To, I don't know if you may know, but the Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, he's lying in an ocean of milk, so that's not the water of devastation. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, he's lying in his ocean, isn't he? And then we have Karanadakshaya Vishnu, he's lying on an ocean. But underneath that ocean is another ocean which Ananta Shesh is supporting the whole universes. And can anyone say which are the waters of devastation? Where do they come from? Because obviously it's not the ocean of milk. But where's the devastating waters coming from? Is it from Garbhadakshaya? Because there's two devastations. There's the partial devastation and there's the ultimate devastation. So the first type of devastation, which is mentioned in the Vedas, only devastates up to the middle planetary systems. The higher planetary systems, they remain. So they never become devastated. But the middle and the lower planetary systems, they become devastated with water at the part of when Lord Brahma goes to sleep. So the ultimate devastation, which is spoken about here, is the partial demonstration, devastation. And that will come from the Garbhadakshaya ocean. But the ultimate devastation at the end of time comes from the waters which Ananta Shesh is holding up the universe on. So it's quite incredible, all this stuff, isn't it? Yes. So I'm going to finish up by saying that there's many cyclic movements, cycles going on in our lives, birth, death, old age, disease, birth, death, old age, disease, that is there. And that's in the microscopic world, you could say. In the macroscopic world, there is creation, maintenance, and destruction. The whole cosmos, that's going on. I thought it was quite interesting to finish off at this point, which I heard from one of our acharyas, that even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his lila, his kirtan, is a cyclic movement. How is it a cyclic movement? One of our acharyas has given a very good understanding of this, that Goloka Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. You chant the holy name, you bring down the Lord into this plane. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he hears the devotees chanting that mantra, he begins to dance. And when he dances, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dances, and bear in mind that any kirtan you're doing, if it's pure, Mahaprabhu was there. He's also there in that kirtan. And all his followers are there as well. So, Goloka Vrindavan Hari, the devotees bring out, Hare Krishna, we bring the holy name down. Mahaprabhu hears it, he dances. And then what does he do? He enthuses other devotees to chant. He, what's the word he used here? He enthuses, and it's a very assertive energy. This spiritual energy is very assertive. It asserts itself in the hearts of others. And those that weren't chanting, they begin to chant and dance. They then call down, Goloka Premadana Harinam. So you understand there's that cyclic movement going on. We call down the holy name, we chant nicely, Mahaprabhu. We get Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to dance. He dances enthusiastically, enthuses us. We get other people to chant and dance. Then they also call down the holy name. So this movement is going on. This is the Sankirtan movement. It's quite interesting. So this is a wonderful way of... it's the higher cyclic circle, if you like. You know. the chanting and the. So, thank you very much for hearing me out. And if anyone has any comments or questions or discussion points on the cyclic movements or anything else. Yes, Prabhupada.
There's a talk about time, firstly,
thank you.
Yes,
it does. It talks about time in the Srimad Bhagavatam in many different capacities. One way it measures time, every single, it measures the time that the sun takes to go over an atom. It also mentions a truti, which is 33,000th of 1 second. It also, you know, in the Vedas, because mathematics are origins from the Vedas. So a truti is a very small. So yes, time is discussed in many ways in the Bhagavatam. But that's one interesting way it measures time. Time I am, the destroyer of all, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Ultimately, the spiritual plane is timeless. But still, in the if in Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Maharaj Astakali Leela, you see there's 8 sections of time where Krishna performs his Leela. And speed and time. Einstein's theory of general relativity, curvature of space, how that's also loosely discussed in the Vedas, how the universe is actually a globe. But how is a globe? I don't know. But the quickness, Einstein used to say that nothing can travel faster than lightning. But in quantum physics, you have the theory of instant communication, where one particle billions of miles from another can instantly communicate. This is like they can't, and Einstein called it spooky action at a distance, he called it. He couldn't accept it. But mind is the fastest method of transport. It goes, it's much faster. You can immediately think yourself and go look at Vrindavan, and you'll be there. So time is a relative thing to this world. That's what Einstein's theory of relativity. One time, Krishna asked Radharani, where did you learn that glance? Did you learn that from lightning, or did lightning learn its speed from your glance? So even Krishna speaks about it. Because when a highly cultured lady, she's very, gracious and chaste, isn't it? High-class lady. But yet, she quickly glances at Krishna. No one can detect the glance, but Krishna can detect it. And it's so fast that it's even faster than lightning. So Krishna's asking that question of her. So yes, speed is discussed. Time is discussed. Anything else? Excuse me, I'm a little sick today. Aren't you building a Vedic model or something? Someone told me. Huh? That would be very good. You should hang that from the new Haveli. We should exhibit these planetary systems. Very complex, but it will take time. But it's a good project, Prabhu. It's a good project. I definitely encourage you to that. Last question, yes. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Then the internet can hear.
Yeah, in the translation, Prabhupada mentions that out of fear of the vast water at the end of millennium, the Vedas came out of Brahma's mouth.
Mm.
So the question is how this fear is related. If Brahma is fearful, then Vedas coming out. So how can we understand this?
Out of fear, yeah. He says, what does he actually say? Can you read what he says?
Because my fear of the vast water at the end of the millennium, the Vedas came out of my, that is Brahma's mouth, and Lord enjoys those vast water and protects the Vedas.
Yes, that's an interesting question. Definitely Lord Brahma is, he is not completely free from all fear, because he is stationed in a position. And although he is intimately connected with Krishna because he came from the lotus stem of Krishna, still he is tinged by motor passion to some extent, so there's some fearfulness will be there. But these are all leelas of Krishna. In his fearfulness, the Vedas came out of his mouth, and then that demon took what's his name? He took that Vedas and stole the Vedas. In fact, I was going to bring it up in my class, but I'd never get to it. But it's an important analogy that today, in today's world, knowledge has been stolen by the so-called intellectuals, and the Vedas has been minimized, and a new type of knowledge is being taught in schools and universities today. But it's not very scientific, although it portrays itself as scientific. For instance, Darwin's theory of evolution and all this kind of stuff, and all the sciences behind it. If you actually speak to the scholars in the field, they will debate many aspects of Darwin's theory of evolution and many other aspects of science. But in schools and universities, we're just taught over and over again the same stuff. And the Dr. James Torr, he's a PhD in chemist, he's a leading member of the intelligent design movement, he will tell you that if you discuss these things with real scholars, they can definitely understand, actually this is not so clear. You know what I mean? In universities and schools, yes, it's clear-cut, Darwin's truth, but actually, the fact is that it's a theory that's being worked on, and there's many flaws in the theory. So this demon, he stole the knowledge, and that, you could say, represents today's world. Like Shankaracharya, he misrepresented the Vedas and twisted its meanings. So many people grasp hold of things in the material world and assume many things about transitions, for instance. In evolution, you have this idea of transitions. But actually, if you look at the records, there are no transitions. But yet we're taught at school there's transitions. But the scholars in the field will admit, actually, there's no real transitions. What we thought was a transition between a bear and a whale was actually a seal. Or, for instance, you go to Lucy in the History Museum. First thing you do, if you go into the History Museum, British History Museum, you'll find Darwin on full display. Then you'll find this Lucy, this so-called ape that's in between men and... But if you look at her hip, there's much debate about her hip. She had a gait like an ape. So how do we know she was there? He was just another ape, that was all. So these things. Brahma was fearful because he's in the mode of passion. This is all a leela pastime. The Vedas disappeared from his mouth somehow or other. The fish came along, saved the Vedas. And it's all beautiful leelas. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai.